hey, good to be back here today. And one of the questions that we're getting as a follow-up, or not the questions, we've talked to a lot of small business owners, and they're all like, okay, we subscribe, we get it. We understand the whole concept of just preparing a tax return versus doing planning and advisory. And, you know, so of course we want to do planning and advisory. What are some of the most common areas that you work in, or what are some of the, do you have like workhorse strategies that you use and all that? And the answer is yes, right? The short answer is yes. Of course we have, there are some common strategies that all business owners should be using. But what we also like to tell folks is that we really, with my background personally as a real estate investor, and also quite honestly, a lot of the clients that we work with know this. I have a computer science degree from back in the day, right? So we kind of have an affinity towards working with real estate investors and tech companies in particular. And one of the questions that comes up all the time is like, well, what could we do as a real estate investor? Is there something profound? And I do like a little 30-second blurb, and I say, listen, every person who owns an investment property who is renting either residential or commercial, like even in the building we're sitting at the moment, you should consider cost segregation, right? So many times people show up at the plate, so to speak, in tax prep time, and they're like, okay, well, here's the improvements that I did. I bought this property. I was just talking to an investor the other day, bought a property for like $600,000 and change, and put about $200,000 of renovations into it. And like everybody knows what depreciation means, right? Depreciation technically is recovering the costs that you put into the property for the purchase and the improvements. So in this case, you know, overall, there's about $700,000 in that example of available value that can be depreciated. Now, generally, you don't depreciate land, but the improvements, the structure, the building, the elevators, the flooring, the carpeting, painting, et cetera, you don't just get to expense that stuff immediately. But the general rule is if it's commercial property, you have to take 39 years. That could take forever to get back your return on your investment. And if it's a residential property, like where folks are living, apartment buildings, condos, duplex, triplex, quadplex, you're waiting 27 years to get your investment return. So wouldn't it be great if we could take those values and reduce them to a more palatable rate, say 10 to 15 years, for example? You know, there's no free lunch. There's no such thing as, oh, we're going to pay zero taxes necessarily. But wouldn't it be great in a very friendly way to be able to capture the depreciation and reduce it? So that's what cost segregation does. Like we get questions, I don't know, what do you mean? It has to be 27 and a half years. So cost segregation is a study. It's an economic study and a technical study on a property where you could take the property and break it down, segregate it. That's why it's called segregation of the cost, including the acquisition and the improvements, and break those down into components where, wow, you can say, we're always going to have 27-year property. We're always going to have 39-year property. But we could take some of the components and break them into smaller pieces and accelerate the depreciation on those. So instead of having to wait 27 years, or 39 years, maybe we can get 10 years. So what does that do for you? Well, it reduces your rental income, your taxable income, because it's increasing essentially the depreciation deduction. And then secondly, once you get those greater deductions, you're improving your cash flow. Why? Because you're lowering your tax liability. You're lowering your quarterly estimated payments. Remember, if you're self-employed, even if you're a real estate investor, you have to pay taxes on a quarterly basis. It's a pay-as-you-go system. So like folks get a paycheck each week or every month or what have you, they have withholdings. Well, you're required to pay quarterly payments. Well, those quarterly payments are April, June, September, and then the following January. Our goal with tax planning is always, how could we reduce the tax liability, A, but B, the real effect of reducing the tax liability is to reduce the tax liability and increase the cash flow. And you increase the cash flow by lowering your quarterly payments. Because if you can project and know that your tax payments are going to be lower, your tax liability is going to be lower, you could reduce the quarterly payments. So that's one of the first things we take a look at. Hey, cost segregation. Second thing we take a look at is, does this person spend so much time that perhaps they could become qualified for another status in the tax code that would allow them to take losses on their tax year, year after year after year. And, you know, you're probably not, it's not the secret sauce, so to speak, but a real estate professional. So there are some stringent requirements to qualify as a real estate professional. And we take our clients through these cost segregation strategies, for example, and we take our clients through the real estate professional status. And we teach them, A, how it works, B, how to account for it, because unfortunately, it is accounting. But you know how I feel about accounting. It's not forward-looking. That's why it's called accounting. You look back. But you do need to have good records, right? Compliance is important. We have to file our returns on time. We have to be compliant. We have to pay our taxes on time. But what our goal is through planning and using mechanisms like cost segregation, teaching the client about how that works, doing the studies for them in many cases, and then subsequently teaching them about the different statuses in the world, in particular the real estate professional status, and teaching them how to do the accounting correctly for that to make sure that they qualify to meet the stringent requirements. These are two areas of the tax code for real estate investors that are looked at, and rightfully so, by the federal government, state, local governments. Like, if you're going to get bigger deductions, you better make sure you have your T's crossed and your I's dotted. So yes, we're focused on the compliance, but the reason why we're really invoking these strategies is to overall reduce the tax bill. So I hope that makes sense on the real estate investor front. Secondarily, we take a look at technology companies. Who's developing an app? Who's developing a new procedure, a new process? Who's developing a new quality product? And hey, can we get a deduction for those items, developing a product? Well, of course you can. But what is more important is the government also wants you to get a tax credit when you're doing and developing products. Now, they have to be experimental in nature. They have to be new. It doesn't have to be a product per se. It doesn't have to be solar panels or electric vehicles. Those seem to be all the rage nowadays. But it can also be a process. And it doesn't have to be a process that necessarily is offered to the public. It could be a process that you use internally. Now, that requirement's a little bit more stringent. But at the same time, are you developing a new product? Are you developing a new service? And if so, do you have revenues? Do you know with the research and development tax credit that recently it was expanded that in the beginning years, you may not even have to have revenues? So you might be expending a lot of dollars for materials, supplies related to it, but even more importantly, payroll, the intellectuals behind developing this new product. And so the government is willing to give you a tax credit. And remember the way tax credits work. Right? Tax deductions take your income, your revenue deductions, and reduces the revenue, increases the expense. But a tax credit said, okay, we figured out your bottom line. Here's your revenue that you have to pay taxes on. And here's hypothetically the tax bill. So let's say you had a $100,000 profit, just to make a round number. And let's say that it was determined that the tax bill was $25,000 on that $100,000, just a simplified case. So now we're at the moment where we've taken all the deductions we're legally allowed to given the constraints of the tax code and given the way we function as a business owner. But wouldn't it be cool if we said, okay, we can now take that tax liability of $25,000 and apply a credit against it, a credit to reduce the $25,000 liability to bring it down to, say, $10,000, maybe even eliminate it to zero, depending upon the facts and circumstances. Well, this is what a tax credit does in general, but specifically a research and development tax credit looks at the industry, think patents, think new developments, new processes, new products to be used internally or even to be used externally for your customers. Preferably, it has to be experimental in nature. There has to be payroll. There has to be supplies. There has to be, when I say experimental, I'm talking about the outcome must not be known ahead of time. And think about the way, remember when you were a kid and you were in school, you're testing a hypothesis, you come up with a hypothesis, you test it, and you continue to test to figure out the result, the scientific method, so to speak. Well, think about it in that way. I'm oversimplifying it, but it's that mindset. You're coming to the market. You think there's a new product. You think there's a new app. There's a new software. You know, right now we're talking about, if you're following the current news, ChatGPT. I wonder what the tax credit could be on that in an R&D environment. Hopefully they're working with an advisor or a planner who's knowledgeable. And that's what we try to do. And not only do we do it one of, not only do we take a snapshot, but we develop a plan. And in that plan, we have a roadmap. We have a blueprint for how your business is going to operate. And it becomes a living, breathing part of how you continue to function. And then what we do is on a monthly or quarterly basis, we hold you accountable. We say, hey, those strategies that we talked about, have you implemented them? Good. Glad you're using it. Now, how are you documenting it? What are you doing? So we're holding the hand. Not only are we planning and showing folks in the right direction what they could be doing and how to educate them, but we're also helping them put them into play in a lot of cases. We call that the implementation part. So we have planning, we have advisory done on a proactive, continual basis. And that's kind of where we are and what we like to do. Research and development credits, real estate folks we work with. So if you're developing software, if you're a rental property owner, if you're a developer per se, how does that work? Those are the areas that we kind of focus on. But also there are some workhorse strategies that we take a look at in terms of how we teach our clients what to do. And we do it on an ongoing basis, not only at the federal level, but at the state and local level. So we're constantly monitoring the rules and regulations, looking at what's coming out, and we're looking at your business. We get to truly know your business. So that's the fun part about what we're doing. And we believe that we're helping our clients. You know, we're not playing fast and loose. We're not going to take away from your business. We're not going to jeopardize you. But at the same time, we're not going to jeopardize ourselves too. We're professionals, we're CPAs, and we're utilizing our skill set, the knowledge and expertise. The problem is that most people come into someone's office and they feel as though, hey, you're preparing the tax return, you're saving me money. No, that's not how 90% of this industry works. 90% of this industry is looking backwards. It's accounting for what happened in the past. It's compliance, right? And that's the issue here. We're not saying that people are not doing the right job. We're just saying there's a different focus. I came out of the world of being a CFO in a small company. And back in the day, I learned right away that there was a difference between someone coming in and handling accounting and compliance, which is absolutely important, versus someone who really truly had knowledge and expertise in a field, in an industry, and able to apply that and plan forward to reduce your tax bill, to increase your cash flow. And that's our perspective, and that's where we come from. So I hope that answers your questions. And we'll talk to you next time. We'll get into some of the other strategies that we use. And we'll talk about some of the industry factors and what's coming up on the horizon as far as some of the latest planning strategies to help reduce your tax bill for small business owners. Thanks, and have a great day.